Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I bring forward what I feel is like a spiritual revolution happening in this country, new insights into body, mind, spirit, and the connection of all of those subjects and how we are actually building a new culture. And a lot of this is based on history, on other cultures that have come before us, and we're trying to move forward into a new direction and heal the planet and heal ourselves. And I'm very excited about talking tonight to tonight's guest named Robert Gallup. And Robert is connected to a Buddhist monk named Longpa Prasert. And he will be coming to New York on June 18th to give a free healing clinic with his very very intense protocols on all sorts of levels of illness. And that'll be at the ARE in New York at 241 West 30th Street. And I'll give my email at the end of the show. And if people want to come, they can just come down there. But Robert, are you there?
I sure am. Hi, Alan.
Okay, I'm really excited about you talking about your connection to your teacher, Longpa, and who he is, because I really want people to know how, there's lots of people who call themselves healers, and what it is that you feel makes this particular person different and special for you.
Well, I'd love to. First of all, yeah. I was listening to your introduction, and it just resonated with me. I feel fortunate that we have people like you out there doing what you're doing, because we need more of that to bring balance to all that we know is going on. You know, so thank you.
Why I wanted to do a program like this, because I do think it's a way of counterbalance, or contributing to the culture in a positive way. And I'm just out there researching, I just got connected to you, and I'm really happy to help create this in New York for you. So, thank you for that.
Awesome.
But let's talk about why Longpa is really a special type of healer.
Well, you know what? It goes back to his early childhood. It wasn't necessarily something that, there's two sides to that. You could say that, was he born with this? Well, I think that, some people are, but in his case.
But wait, let's back up just a little bit and let's introduce him. Let's just say who he is who he is.
Sure.
And then. You know.
Well, Longpa is a Buddhist monk in the Thai Theravadan tradition. So any Buddhists out there will know that, there's three traditions. There's Mahayana, which is mostly China, Korea, Vietnam, countries like that. Theravadan, which of course is Sri Lanka and Burma and Thailand. And Vajrayana, which is the most well-known, but the smallest, which is Tibetan, if you will, Tibetan. So Longpa is from Thailand, Theravadan. And is an ordained monk, and he's got different temples around the world. But his unique gift is healing. So someone would think, well, is that consistent with many Thai monks or forest monks? No, definitely not. The unique situation with Longpa, and he'll speak about this on when we're in New York. One of the healing modalities that he uses is called fire katina, and that is something where you're using fire, but and heat, and he does hands-on healing, but he doesn't limit it to hands-on healing, because he also brings in color therapy. He brings in food protocols, specific foods. You have diabetes. Which things will dramatically help balance that. If you have high blood pressure, what do they use in temples in Thailand? You understand, going back in the history of Thailand, and probably a lot of Asian countries, when before medicine as we know it today existed, People would, if they got sick, where did they go? They went to the temples. And it was the temples that learned these traditional old ways of healing.
No, I just want to say, but what you said about Longpas, he has a special facility. I mean, basically, my understanding is like there's nothing that he can't heal or treat, and if he doesn't know how to do it, he'll go into a meditation and find the answer. That's a special gift.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is he brings both into play. He brings both of them into play. So when he sits with someone, the first thing he'll do is he'll put his hands on that person's back and look at the body, scan the body. And
this
see
is before the,
body. The
person says anything like what's wrong with them, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
From there, he will, after a short couple of minutes, and he'll dialogue a little bit. But mainly what he's doing is he's looking to find out where there's specific weaknesses. But also, more than that, he's seeing exactly what's going on in the body. And, in the case of myself, we were talking about that earlier.
Right.
The first time I met him, what happened was I was staying at a temple up in Southern California. And I didn't know anything about him, didn't know who he was. So as a Westerner, so he's very famous in the Thai community. But me being a foreigner, me being a Westerner, if you will, Phrong, I was upstairs and one of the monks it's a Thai temple. And one of the monks upstairs said, "Hey, you should come down. There's a monk visiting and he's in the office. He's only here for a couple hours. And you should come and visit him. He's got some very special gifts." I didn't know what that meant. So I went downstairs and he was sitting in the office and so this younger monk kind of pushed me in the door and said, go and say hello. So I went in and sat down and we made some small talk. He asked if I'd been to Thailand before and what my, experiences were and stuff. And I'd been to, I was married in Thailand, been there for back and forth many times. But so as we sat there chatting, and I noticed to the left of me where the outside door was, there was a lineup starting to grow of Thai people, and I didn't know. I was unaware of what was going on. So I was about to excuse myself, so the monk says, "Well, wait a sec, have him check you. And I thought, "What does that mean, check you?" I said, "Well, he could see in your body and just he'll be able to check you." I said, "No, I'm fine. I feel fine." He said, "Well." And so, actually, Alan, that particular, he never did put his hands on me. He never did what I was describing, what he always does, normally does. But he said, "Robert, you have, and he pointed at this particular area in my body where my gallbladder was, and he said, you have an infection, a problem with your gallbladder."
Were you feeling ill or something?
No, that's the funny thing. You might, again, I'm sure you have great listeners who've been around the circle a couple times. They kind of know this side of things. That wasn't me. I was kind of, okay,
Okay.
And so I said, "Thank you very much," and I left. But it took about 3 months to manifest to where I really started having problems. And I was having problems with indigestion and gas. I was hardly able to eat anything without having a lot of pain. It took my wife finally saying, "You got to get down to see Dr. Steinberg up in Palm Desert and have him take a look and just to tell him what's going on." So in doing that, he's the one who sent me in Palm Springs. There's the main hospital there. And I had what's called a hiatus scan, and that's where they check and see. So the technician's there, and he's seeing that my gallbladder was like 3 times normal size, and I had some kind of a blockage in the bile duct.
So
you got to remember, let me just say, with Lumpa. That took about 5 minutes of me meeting with him, and then before I left, I said, "Well, if I had some sort of problem over here, if I did, what would I do? How should I remedy it?" So he says, "Well, no problem." He said a couple things. He said green apples. He said he talked about oil. He talked about cilantro. He gave me a specific, exact thing to follow. You know, and so I must admit, I did buy some green apples on the way home, and I did it for about a day, and then I dismissed it. I didn't pay any attention.
Right, and you have to do these things.
Pardon me?
If he gives you a remedy or a formula or food, you have to do it for a few months, right?
Well, yeah, but you know, I didn't really believe at the time.
Right.
I didn't know who he was, you know? And so I didn't take it serious.
Yeah, so what happened
now,
then? Yeah.
Well, as I said, it had gotten pretty bad, and so the person who was behind the computer screen with the whatever it's called that checks your, you know, and sees the what's going on the screen,
right,
and
right.
He says, I'll have to send these results back to Steinberg, and you might have to get your gallbladder removed.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, you know, I'm very holistic minded, and I'm not big on getting my body parts taken out.
Right.
And so I went home, told her about it, and he said, so wait a second, so Dr. Steinberg said, the technician said, I'll send this back to Steinberg, give it a week, and then he'll contact you, make an appointment, and, you know, he'll let you know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, cool, I've got a week.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, so here's the thing, so I was at home that night, and again, I almost forgot about the whole thing with Lompa.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm at home, and what happened was, a friend of mine was visiting, and he says, he's talking in the other room to a friend of his, and he's talking about how in the old days he used to fast, and all he ate was green apples.
Huh.
And then I'm thinking, then I remember, I thought, green apples, where have I heard that before? And then he said, I said, Norm, why did you eat green apples when you'd fast? He said, don't you know, he said, it's pretty common knowledge that when in order to to do a cleanse in your liver gallbladder, you eat green apples. And I thought, that's when the hair on the back of my head stood up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remembered what Lompa said. And then everything, it's like a deck of cards. I thought, oh, my God, it was true.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said to my wife, I said, we got to find him. You know, now it's important. Now I, so that was the beginning.
So you did find him.
Well, if fortunately he hadn't returned back to Thailand yet, he was staying at a little Thai temple in San Diego, off Cherokee Street. And so I did this. So I went back. I stayed at the temple in it's basically near Temecula, and I did this back and forth thing. So I was with him for five days. He did his hands on healing, told me the remedies, did the whole thing. Went back to see. That's when I had to go back for the hiatus again, and there was nothing there. It came back perfect.
Uh-huh, and you did the green apples and the whole diet and...
The whole program, he said, yeah. And of course,
so then you sort of became like a student of his, right?
Right, and again, this was 6-7 years ago.
Right.
This is quite some time ago. But on a side story, here's the thing that really struck me. This is... A couple things. When I went to the Cherokee Temple in San Diego, for the first evening to meet him, and I'm in there waiting in the chanting room or the meditation hall, and he's not there yet, but there are other people there waiting for him, and so I made some small talk, introduced myself, and I'm meeting people who had stage 3 cancer, stage 4 cancer, people with diabetes, serious stuff, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And this one person was, a gentleman who was a school teacher who was just diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, here I am worried a little bit about my thing. Oh my gosh, forget it. Listen to these people. But
right.
I said, tell me your story. How did you meet Lompa? And so this gentleman, the school teacher, says, he says, I come back whenever he's in town, and he checks me, and it's like a top-up, is how he put it, with the energy, and, he said, it was about 2 years before that. Here's what happened. Went to the doctor. He had this growth on his neck, it's like a lump on his neck, and he kept on not paying enough attention to it. And finally, he thought he'd go to the doctor. He went to the doctor, did a little biopsy, and they told him he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Told him that he had to start chemo radiation right away. Had no time. It was stage 4. ABC, everything, you know, all this information was poured at him in that one meeting, and he came out just stunned, didn't know what to do. Could you imagine, you know, when you're given that grave information, and a lot of people are, you know, told that, and it's, you're like in a daze.
What did he do?
You know, for the first 24 hours. And what happened was, on the way home, he had to think, he had to pick up his laundry. He went to the laundry shop, and the first person he talked to was the person, the clerk that ran the store, the laundry shop, and it was a Thai woman. So he told her what had just happened, and the Thai woman says, go see Lone Pa. And he said, who's Lone Pa? He said, go, gave him an address. He's visiting in San Diego. So he went from the laundry shop to see Lone Pa at the temple. And Lone Pa put his hands on him, and David was, you know, gripped in fear, of course. And David said, he said, Lone Pa, I have stage four. I have no time. What? And Lone Pa said, relax. You have stage three. You still have time.
Uh-huh. And what did Lone Pa tell him to do?
Here's the thing. Lone Pa had to leave the next day to go back to Thailand. He had his ticket already. Uh-huh. Lone Pa left. Lone Pa said to him, if you come to Thailand, I could help you. Because that's where I'm going to be for the rains retreat for the season. And then I said to this guy, what did you do? And he said, I went home, I bought a ticket that night, got a plane ticket, I was on a plane out of there within 48 hours. He said, the doctors were calling saying, you got to get back here. And he said, I called them? Because Lone Pa, we're not all for, it's like, we're real careful about, you know, we're not like against doctors or for doctors. I'm just saying what I saw. You know. So I said, what happened next?
David went to Thailand.
Yes.
And what happened?
Well, I said, well, what did you do? He said, well, I was very weak. When I flew, I arrived in Bangkok, and this woman, already, you know, who arrangements were made, and they just took care of me. This woman in Bangkok picked me up and arranged transportation and got me to where the temple was. And when I got there, he did twice, you know, two times a day, hands-on healing for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, morning and evening. I did the whole protocol that he recommends always for cancer.
We'll get into that later, but it's a whole formula,
Yeah, there's 6 points for at the temple in different diseases, but in the case of cancer, it's always these six points are the common thing he always recommends. And so, to your listeners, if anybody knows anybody who does have or is in a similar situation with cancer, get a paper and a pen because, you know, we'll make time and I'll read those things off.
What, do you want to read them now? I mean,
No, we'll come back to it after this, but I'll just run through what he did and what his experience was. So twice a day, that's what he was given, and in addition, the ladies there prepared, helped him with his food, specific food protocol he was to follow, and again, we'll talk about those. And he said, here's what he said exactly. He said, I was scared. I was terrified because, first of all, I'd never traveled outside of the United States, but to be in this condition. But I had faith. I knew I had hope with, you know, I had this sense that I was doing something that was constructive, that was making a difference. He said, by the end of the first week, I was definitely feeling better. By the second week, I was feeling much better. He said, by the third week, I was hiking around the hills around the temple. And he said, by the fourth week, when I would go back to, he said, on the fourth week, I went back to Lone Pa and said, I'm going to call my school in San Diego and tell them I'm going to take another month off. And Lone Pa said, no, go. You're fine. You go home.
So Lone Pa completely healed this guy.
Well, yeah. And not only that, but the guy had checked it when he got back, and everything came out fine. But here's the interesting thing.
Yeah.
Remember I said that when he got to Bangkok, the lady took care of him?
Yeah.
And arranged for his transportation and everything to get to the temple?
Yeah.
This is one of 100 stories. I mean, it's endless. This woman was a Thai woman, and she owns the McDonald's franchise for all of Thailand.
Oh.
And she had ovarian cancer 8 years before that.
Oh.
Needless to say, she's well off.
Right.
And her ovarian cancer, it was stage four. The doctor said, no help. I can't, you know, we can't help you. It was very, very late in the game. And Lumpa started to work with her. And within a certain time frame, she got better, got much better. We then went, and when Lumpa said, you're fine, he said she was so worrisome, she didn't believe him.
Uh-huh.
And Lumpa said, go to the doctor and check, so you have peace of mind, go. And she said to Lumpa, I'm not going to go to any hospitals around here, because they all know me, and they might not tell me the truth. They're going to, you know, it's like they want to make me happy, and, you know, they don't have to do that. In this country, you have to tell the patient, you know.
The truth.
You got this, you got that. There, what happens is it's up to the family. And if the family doesn't want to know because they don't want you to get stressed or worried, they have the choice to saying so that to have the doctors not tell you or make it out like you're okay so you don't have to worry so much. So she says, I'm not going to go to the doctors. You're going to get on the plane with me, and we're flying to France. So he takes Lumpa out of France, goes to the top hospital in France, has a complete check over, and then again is told you're fine and has X-rays and everything.
But let me just ask you, what are these qualities that Lumpa has that, first of all, that people believe in him? What's his presence like? I mean, looking at his picture is really intense, but he must have a quality of presence that people then feel like this guy is tuned into something. What can you describe about him?
There's definitely an energy dynamic there. Just the first thing that comes to mind. You know, when I'm around and when we travel, like we do on the road, this thing coming up, you just by being around him, you pick up a certain, there's an aura, there's an energy there that is hard to describe.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get his, you could tell by his eyes, his practice is very profound in terms of the practicing. He's practiced in caves, he's practiced, his meditation, meditated 18, 20 hours. He's able to do enormously unusual things due to, he would say, his practice of meditation. That's why he strongly encourages.
What kind of unusual things? Describe some of those if you can.
Well, we were touching on that earlier about if somebody, and I get this from time to time, someone will say, well, my so-and-so, he can't travel. Can Lumpa help him? And Lumpa would say, send a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Send an address and a photograph and a time when he will be there. Mm-hmm. And I will come and try to help.
He'll come out
and
of his body. He'll come.
Absolutely. But what's interesting is, see, here's the thing, Alan, with a lot of gurus and great masters, they'll... It's interesting because you hear about these things, but they almost make it a mystery.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, Lumpa will say, it's not a mystery. You want to know how you do it? I'll tell you how to do it. You know, you want to learn how to look inside the body. There's a specific meditation. Here's what the meditation. You practice this, and this is the result. It's not
have you learned
miracle.
That? Have you studied that? That'd be amazing.
We're going to go through that in the when we all get together in New York.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Great.
But
great.
What I was going to say was, when it comes to, this is real important, is that when he talks about someone sending a photograph, an address, and a time, he will share with me on a number of occasions the person was, like, for example, the person wasn't there when they said they were going to be there. He could check. And he said, the problem, Robert, is this. When we make these arrangements, and I go into meditation, and I move, and I travel out to that place, it takes enormous energy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what happens is, with that address, I know where I'm going, and the problem is, if the person's not there, what happens is my energy goes there and then past them. And because they're not there, my energy is a great amount of energy is extended and is lost. Because it's like I go there and I go past them. If that person's there, then my energy's there and it stops there. And nothing is lost. Everything is contained.
Amazing.
So that was one of the interesting things, is that it's important that person be there when they say they're going to be there at a particular time.
But he also does a mind-to-mind sort of thing. Can you talk about that, what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. That was that is it's interesting. Remember, I was talking about the gallbladder thing that I was dealing with.
Yeah.
Well, when I went back that night to the temple, this is the first time, you know, that occurred. So I went back to the temple, and the only reason I stayed at the temple was particularly because of the location, close proximity to, you know, where I had to travel. I didn't have to go all the way back to Palm Springs where we were living at the time.
Right.
So that night, I go to sleep in the room I was provided. And about 4 in the morning, what happened was I'm laying there sleeping, but I felt like half awake, half asleep. And I could see Lompa's face, okay? And it's like, I see his face, it's right there. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, it's just a dream, whatever, I roll over, I'm tired, I want to go back to sleep, so I don't roll over to the other side. And he's right there again. It's like you could see his face, you know? And I'm thinking, no. So I roll over to the other side, and I just try to go back to sleep. This goes on for about 15 minutes. I'm real persistent when I'm tired. What happened was, it was so obvious, although this has never happened in my whole life before, it just became so clear to me, this is him coming to me, he wants me to do something.
Oh.
And so, to the point where I literally said to myself, after about 15, 20 minutes of this not giving up, I said to myself, okay, that's fine, so I'll do it. Okay, so I sat up in meditation position.
Yeah.
Sat up in meditation position. And then what he asked me to do was to visualize a candle flame.
Uh-huh.
Visualize a candle flame, and then take that candle flame and position it under your right rib, which is where your gallbladder is, and hold it there, and hold it there. So it was a form of meditation. I just viewed it as a form of meditation, holding the candle flame in that particular place. I'm holding it there. And, of course, if anybody does this, of course, you'll notice that, first of all, it reduces pain, but in particular it creates heat.
Yeah.
So I'm holding it, it's creating,
yeah.
So it's creating heat, and so I do this for about 20 minutes, and at the end he had me lay back, okay, breathing in through the acupressure point at the top of the head, down into that area of the gallbladder, and then out the feet, to the top of the head, down, gallbladder, out the feet. Do this for about a minute, breathing up, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, and then it was done. And then I was okay to lay back down and go back to sleep.
Wow.
So I go to sleep and I wake up around 7 or 8 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sit up and I'm trying to remember what happened. And I'm thinking, did I dream that? I mean, no, it happened, but was it my imagination? You know, it's the old little critic in our heads. Which Lompa says is my biggest problem.
Your particular.
If you believed your intuition, if you truly believed, if you got, you'd be able to do so much more than you could even do now.
So that's what you're working on, huh?
Yes, but
Longpa's he's a spiritual master. I mean, he's not just a healer. He's truly an awakened being, it sounds like.
Yeah, with the experiences that he's had, and just being around him, every time I meet him, if we're away for 2-3 months from each other, you can write a whole novel about all that you've missed.
Like what kind of stuff?
Well, let me back up for a sec. Here's the interesting thing. I wake up and I think to myself, you know what? I probably made that up. It was probably just my imagination, you know?
Yeah.
So I get up and I walk into the kitchen area and Pra Anachal, this other monk, a Thai monk who's a younger monk. So, and I don't speak Thai, but Pra Anachal speaks both English and Thai. So I go over to him and I said, could you do me a favor? I said, can you get a hold of Lompa? I gave him the phone number. He's staying in San Diego. I call him, please. Because, see, here's the thing, Alan. Here's the thing. I've heard about the fire meditation and how sometimes you got to be careful if you do it. You could, you know, if you're not doing it right, you create problems maybe. You
right,
see, now I'm thinking
right.
Maybe if I did something wrong and I was imagining this and then I shouldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I says, can you call Lompa and ask him a question for me and translate? And Pranachal said, sure. So he gets on the phone and so he's got him on the phone and he says, okay, what did you want to ask? And so I asked him, I said, ask Lompa, 4 in the morning last night, I said, did he come to me and did he ask me to do A, B, C, D, E?
Yeah.
And so I went through the whole thing. And so Pranashah's talking now in Thai and they're for a couple of minutes, you know? And then Prahanacha, he's wearing the orange robes. And he lifts up his arm, the robe off his arm, to his point. He's pointing to me while he's talking in Thai. I don't know what he's saying. And he says, look at my arm. He's like this, pointing at his arm. And his hand is, his hair standing up. And he says, my hair is standing up. I said, well, why? He said, he did come to you last night. He told you, but he told you to do 15 minutes, not 20 minutes. Don't do it too long.
Oh. Wow.
Then I started to, again, I started to try to believe more what was really going on.
Well, let's go back, because in the original, in the first part, you started to go into the story about him as a child playing, doing this fire thing. Can you talk about that? What happened to him when he was younger and how he got into the
And we'll speak more about that in New York, but it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because here's what happened. Lumpa grew up, his family were peasant farmers.
Mm-hmm.
In the north of Thailand. And so we're poor.
Right.
And when he was very, very little, what would happen is they would get up very early in the morning before daybreak, before the sun came up, and they'd have to go out into the fields and work.
Uh-huh.
The elder kids and the parents. He was the youngest at the time. So you know what they would do? The parents would take Lumpa when he was so little, bundle them up in a blanket, okay,
mm-hmm.
and start a fire, mm-hmm. and put them near the fire so he would be warm, because they didn't have central heat, you know, back then.
Right.
So he would sit there for hours upon hours while they're working in the fields, and they would come in, you know, for a late breakfast, and he'd already been bundled up out there alone,
mm-hmm.
for hours and hours, day after day,
wow.
week after, month after, year after, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's sitting there all of this time. What would he do? He just looked at the fire, look at the fire, look at the fire. He didn't know what else to do. He was sitting there, bundled all alone.
Mm.
For years, that would be the ritual, you know, sit there, look at the fire. So, and what happened was, I think it was like third or fourth grade. I'll have to ask him when we're in New York. Third or fourth grade, and the teacher was writing on the chalkboard, you know, his daily homework assignments, and he was particularly focused, staring at the teacher's back. And after about 10 or 15 minutes, the teacher started to pull at her shirt, she started yelling and that her back was on fire, and she ran out of the classroom. And
wow.
to the bathroom. She thought she was on fire. And Lumpa was scared because he realized that he thought that he'd done that. He realized what he had done. And the parents couldn't explain it. He couldn't explain it. And that was like, okay, take your kid to the temple day. And the monks, of course, knew what was going on.
Oh. So is that a power he has? Could he stare at something and create a fire? Have you seen him do that?
He uses it in healing. For example, when he's looking in the body, that's exactly what he's doing. He's using, in other words, if he's looking at a particular area in the body that needs whatever is going on, he'll use that, but he'll take it from heart. It's interesting because a lot of people who do, like, we'll talk about it, like hands-on healing and, I don't know, healing touch, or there's a lot of different forms. People like that will come to those gatherings that we've had up in California. And, they'll ask, what's your technique? And with Lumpa, it's the heart, bringing that fire energy into the heart. And then from the heart, out through the shoulders and chest, out through the arms, out through the hands, and into the body of the person that he's working on.
So he brings it into his heart first, or into the patient's heart?
Into his heart. It comes from his heart.
So he brings
it out through the hands. And so with, are you familiar with Thai forest monks or Theravadan monks?
No, not at all.
They cannot touch. The thing is that they have one of the precepts is they can't touch females,
uh-huh.
right? And so in particular, especially it's a good rule for the younger monks and what have you during training. And it's just something that is in the tradition, their tradition.
Right.
So one would ask, well, if he's doing healing and it's a woman, how is he going to heal her if he can't touch her? Okay,
right.
So here's his technique. Okay, he always brings a box of thick candles, because candles are a good conduit to send energy through. Right. So if it's a female that's sitting in front, you'll see in New York, he'll use two candles and he'll hold the candles and send them to the specific area, whether it be kidney or whatever is going on.
He'll light the candle?
No. He'll hold it.
Oh,
both
just
hands.
On the area.
So one part of the candle at the end is on the person's back, the other he's holding in his hands.
Oh, I see.
Right?
See.
But to help him out, we got to bring lots of candles. You know why?
Why?
You watch in New York. You watch those candles. And he's going to, they're going to, they end up curling into a bar that's turned into a circle because they just almost melt after.
He's really sending
so
heat
got,
through.
Yes, through the, sending the energy through the candles. Yeah.
Wow. So that's something, it's just a gift that he developed as a child. But he was a normal person, you told me, for a while. He lived a regular life. He wasn't always a monk, was he?
No. He'd always been, and one of his teachers was, he'd had several different teachers. One of them was Ajahn Chah, which was probably the most well-known Thai monk. In the last generation, other than
is that the one who lived to over 200?
No. Ajahn Chah was Ajahn Chah was known in particular for a lot of Westerners during the 70s, 60s, who went to Thailand to ordain. They always seemed to end up at Ajahn Chah's temple, and he was very famous because he's known as one of the most wisest, most amazing teachers. And so if you go to any Barnes & Noble, any bookstore across the United States, and you look under Buddhists, you'll find Ajahn Chah. He's so famous. So that was one of Lumpa's teachers from when he was very young who helped to guide him.
I see. But
and then,
he grew up,
from there, he had, other teachers.
But he had a family. You said he was in the Air Force.
What happened there was... at a certain age, people need to are advised to what would be called register for the military, right? So they have it like in Korea, South Korea, and different countries that it's pretty common practice. So for Lumpa, here's the interesting story. The side story to that was that when he was he was in the airborne, and he was taught how to jump out of a plane and parachuting and all that kind of stuff. So here he is. This is a whole separate book, but it's Lumpa's life. So here he is. He gets in the plane. Now he's up. Okay. Now on a side note, here's the thing. This was during the time when the Vietnam War was going on. You got a lot of American soldiers out there going through hell in Vietnam.
Right.
Just put it mildly, because we know.
Which is not far from Thailand, really.
And the United States already had agreements with various countries, including Thailand, that should anything happen, they can call upon.
Right.
If I understand it correctly. But anyway, so Thailand is saying, okay, we've got to send some, we've got support and help. So Thailand and the United States, they were out there shoulder to shoulder. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know that. So what happened was now, there's a military plane with Thai people in there, and one of the people is Lumpa. Okay, now it's time to jump out of the plane. So he jumps out of the plane, pulls his parachute, and now he's landing onto the ground in Vietnam. But when he lands, he doesn't land in a field somewhere. He lands smack dab in the middle of a POW camp.
Wow.
So for the rest of the war, he is a prisoner.
Okay. By the Vietnam.
In Vietnam. Now, two things. One, for Lumpa, he was well-versed in meditation, so that's what he did most of the time. The food was terrible, but that wasn't a problem. But here's the interesting thing. Do you know who else was in that same POW camp as he was?
No.
John McCain.
Oh, John McCain. Oh,
yes.
I see.
The last time we were chatting, he said that he felt for the American POWs because they got the heaviest abuse. The Vietnamese people felt, well, you guys have to be here because you're forced to be here, the Thai guys. You know, so they kind of, you know, you gotta put in your time, and you're still locked up, and he got beat up, don't get me wrong, and he got abused. But Lung Pa's heart went out to the Americans that were in that camp.
So he feels close to the Americans because of that situation?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I see.
He's seen a lot. He's definitely has seen a lot.
But then, you know, did he have a family too? Was he married or?
Yes, when he came back, he did marry, and there was for a number of years, and then he let his wife know that at a certain time he was going to be ordaining, and that was his calling, and so that was sort of clear in his history too.
Did he have children too?
I believe he has one son, and again, they are they're there to support what he does. But what's interesting is the woman. This is a little interesting side story. The woman that I was describing, who had the ovarian cancer, cured, she wanted to show her thanks because of getting her life back.
Right.
And she kept saying, I want to make a donation. And he said, you know, we'll put some money in. So Lung Pa kept saying, no. Because for Lung Pa, it's always donation. You know, it's not about the money. What she did was she was able to find out from the bank what his bank account was. And she wired, my wife would know better. She's got all this down to the last detail. When he checked his account, she ended up seeing, I'm talking about millions of baht, and just gave it back to him. But my point for saying that is that, but to this day, if he travels to, like when he comes from Thailand to the United States or something, she's the one will support him and pay for his ticket. And when he flies back, it's that woman's son that will help if he needs to have a ride somewhere or needs to be driven to, you know, to get a passport or something. So that's the people that are around him that help out and do these things just out of, you could never pay back, but the appreciation that they have for him, you know?
Yeah. So he, at some point, decided to leave the marriage, leave his family, and go and be a Buddhist monk and go into
healing.
Well, yeah,
when the son had gotten to a certain age, was fully grown up.
Right.
And the wife knew it, yeah.
But was called. He then had to study more. Or was he just then like kind of tapped into this gift he had?
No. Well, a couple of things. When he was younger, he had traveled to. He'd always been interested in healing. At the same time, so he had traveled to China for quite a spell of time, and practiced acupuncture and Chinese herbs and things like that. And then here, of course, in Thailand, practiced Thai traditional medicine. And in addition, he had two other famous teachers who had high levels or high gifts. And when one of them had passed, there was something that had transpired where that master had told Lung Pa what he was going to give him. And he put his foot on the back of Lung Pa's neck, and there's a whole thing about that Lung Pa, you know, can talk about, you know,
like a transmission of energy and wisdom.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's so really fascinating. That's great.
So what I'm saying is, you're starting to get a compilation of a number of things going on here.
Well, when did he come up with these? He, like, for cancer, when did he come up with that? Was that something he created on his own? And let's go through that, because we only have another maybe 15 minutes. But these sort of miraculous cures, although it's not miraculous, it's sort of...
Some of them go back to traditional Thai medicine, and some of them are coming directly from his meditation. So when he would go into deep meditation, if something that someone comes and brings something of a mystery to him, he'll sit in meditation and ask them to come back in a day or two.
So is it true there's nothing he can't really deal with? I mean, is that?
I wouldn't go that far, because I'm not with him all the time.
Right.
But I know that, you know, but what's interesting is I'm writing down things. Lumpa said he's only going to do healing for 6 more years. You got to remember, he's a monk that happens to heal. He's not a healer. It's not his thing. So he's not out trying to promote himself or doing anything like that.
No, no, of course not. But he has this gift, yeah, and he wants to share it with the world. So after 6 years, he's going to go back into the forest, stop healing, and just do his meditation practice?
Right. Precisely, Alan. Precisely.
Wow.
So I figure we got 6 years to get the last of what I'm sort of putting down in paper together. And from there, you know, be able to share it with other people who do other forms of healing so they can introduce these other Thai, you know, traditions.
Is he also teaching this fire meditation? I guess he is, right?
It's everything's on the table. It's just we were saying that how in the next 6 years we'd like to find a couple key cities to organize so over the next 6 years we can come back.
Come here, I can share his wisdom.
And continue to learn and master this material before, you know, before he chooses to not do this anymore.
But it's based on, you know, it's based on Chinese and Thai medicine, basically, although it has
on the flyer, here's what we say on the flyer, and I'll just read that because it really encapsulates it. Okay, so for people that are going to attend the gathering you're organizing up in
June 18th, June 18th.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, no, at 241 West 30th Street in New York, starting at 1 p.m., so people can just come down there. But, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and just to add to that, I have, which is on the flyer, it says, this is offered on a no-charge donation basis only. Donations go to Lumpao's center, including Wat Bulong, and to help cover travel expenses. Wat Bulong is a center in Thailand that helps people free of charge that have cancer, diabetes, heart disease, liver disease, arthritis, and many other conditions using Thai traditional medicine only. People come from all over the world with varying degrees of paralysis and disease to see Lumpao for cert after finding no relief in Western medicine's high-cost treatments. Lumpao for cert is recognized as one of the top naturopathic healers in Asia, and he strictly relies on the old ways of healing, which include the use of, this ties into your question, which includes the use of top detoxifying, phytochemical-rich, and immune system-building foods and teas, Thai herbs, which he grows and gives away for free, acupuncture, color light therapy, mineral-rich water, mind-body exercises to better oxygenate the body and energize the blood, and other valuable healing modalities that he has been studying since he was very young. Many people come for treatment, including the most poor. Money is never requested at the center. The center relies exclusively on donations.
Uh-huh.
And some people... so that's the gist of it there as far as the different things that he brings into. For example, there's an exercise for oxygenating the body that if people have cancer, oxygenation is important.
Right.
Important aspects regarding alkalizing the body. And meditation is so important for that, you know?
A particular type of meditation, doing certain mantras or something.
Specific
like
meditations, but also when someone is gripped in fear because of a diagnosis.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'll talk about this in New York. Here's what's really sad. We know that if the body doesn't get oxygen, what you're saying is that a body can't get cancer if it's alkalized and is getting a lot of oxygen.
Uh-huh.
So whether it's true or not, here's the interesting thing, though. When I see people sit in front of Lumpa, he puts his hands on them, and they were told they have stage 3, stage 4, whatever's going on. That's extremely difficult thing to bear.
Right.
So they're sitting there. Lumpa's got his hands on them, and here's what I see. Lumpa will have to stand up and lean over, and he'll say, breathe, breathe. They stop breathing because they're gripped in this fear. So most people are chest breathers to begin with.
Right.
But when you go from chest breather to having a diagnosis like this, you're so in your head, understandably so, that you are constantly, you know, forgetting to breathe properly.
So Lungpa gives these people more than just hope. He gives them, possibilities of healing and So why don't you go through that cancer protocol that that he's developed, just so people can like leave this conversation with something really practical.
Sure, absolutely, Alan. That's a good idea. So let's just go through that. The first thing is, I'm just going to pull this up. The first thing he recommends is to get three mushrooms, a white dry fungus mushrooms and two others.
Mm-hmm.
And he recommends that you make a soup or mix it with food and eat it once a day.
Well, for people listening, can you say, tell them what are the types of mushrooms, shiitake or miyatake?
Yeah,
or,
I see, Lumpa just says white dry fungus and two others. So,
of any type?
Of any kind, yes, that's what he says.
Of any kind of mushroom.
Of any kind.
I see.
But what I, you know, my, you know, Thai Holistic Practitioner Alliance, which is who I'm representing, who go a step further and look at, well, and we were talking about that earlier today, how when Lumpa comes up with protocols, I love to take what he says, go find what is Harvard saying and what are the university studies are saying, you know, and bring that back and say, okay, here's what he's saying, but you know what? This is what I found out. What is the research behind what he says?
Well, we don't have time to really go into that now, but we will do that on another show. So if we, it's great to compare the, you know, of course, the scientific findings, but I think if we can just give the protocols and then maybe follow it up with another show where we can compare some of that to the science.
I'd love to, yeah. And of course,
I don't
want to
run out of time before you go through all this. So three types of mushrooms.
So number one was three mushrooms. Number two,
And then with the three mushrooms, you make a soup or mix it with your food, and you eat that one time a day.
Yep,
that's in there.
And number two, he says get Charlotte onions, too small. And Charlotte onions is like a Chinese onion; you get them at most stores.
Uh-huh.
They're very widely available. Two Charlotte onions, too small, cut up and put into a small bowl. Add fresh squeezed lemon juice. Put it over onions into a bowl and pour this over any meal or salad one time a day.
You don't cook the onions, you just keep them fresh?
No.
Okay.
Two small Charlotte onions, lemon juice, and pour it over salad or your food one time a day. The third one is, this will take a minute to go through, drink specially prepared pineapple beverage. And here's how you put it together. Put 1 gallon of purified water. Well, I'll try to say this slow in case someone's writing this down.
Yeah.
Put 1 gallon of purified water into a large pot.
Okay.
Next, take a pineapple, wash it completely, keep skin on, but take the leaves off, and cut it into chunks.
Right.
Be sure to include the pineapple stem, which has the highest levels of phytochemicals.
So you're just taking the leaves off, and you're just cutting it with the skin on. Okay, that's good.
And put it in a blender and blend using some water from the pot. Now add blended pineapple into pot and bring it to a boil.
Uh-huh.
Then let it simmer for 5 to 10 minutes. Then let it cool, strain, and refrigerate.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, have 1 cup after breakfast and 1 cup after dinner.
I bet that tastes pretty good, actually.
It does.
And how many days would you do that for?
Continuous. You're continuing to do this, yeah.
You just do it. You just do it for months, maybe, or however long.
Well, as you're working through your challenge. Yes.
Right. So people, okay. So that's number three. Number four is?
Number four is, and I'll have to spell this, for herbs, using a Thai herb called rangjert, and I'll spell that, R-A-N-G, second word, J-E-R-D. Use rangjert, and the second herb is Luk Thai Bai. I'll spell that, L-O-O-K-P-A-I-B-I.
But how would people find these if they were just hearing this?
Well, people are getting them, you can buy them on the internet. If you type these in, I've had at different, like when we were up in San Diego as well as San Francisco, people said, yeah, they were sharing the websites that they get theirs from. Now, the websites are Thai-based websites. So in other words, they're buying a box and they're bringing it over and they're using it, getting it that way.
So these are special healing herbs from Thailand.
They are. Now, Ronjert is a detoxifying herb, very strong detoxifier. And Luk Thai Bai, it's sort of taken, and I'm going to read through how he tells you to take it. But what's interesting is it's kind of misnomer because on the package it says it helps with, you know, diabetes concerns or blood sugar concerns and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And it struck me how there's a pile of research about how if you have cancer, the importance of managing blood sugar levels or insulin, to not aggravate it and make it worse.
Right.
So anyway, let me just give you that again. Ronjert, R-A-N-G, second word, J-E-R-D, if you're typing that into the search engine. The second herb is Luk-Thai-Bai.
Okay.
So here's what he says. First 2 days, say you go to the temple and, okay, what do I do? First 2 days, you're going to be doing, in the morning, you're going to have Ronjert, and in the evening, you're going to have Luk-Thai-Bai.
Uh-huh.
Now, these come in capsules or tea bags. Either's fine. Three capsules or one tea bag in hot water is considered one serving. If using the tea, let it sit in hot water for a good 10 minutes. Keep the tea bag after use and use again with a new tea bag at next serving.
Mm-hmm. Now, we should probably create a website where this is available for people to just... But I will let people know about that. We only have a few minutes left. Is there anything else that we...
Well, just real quick, I'll just fly through this. Next 2 weeks, have Luk-Thai-Bai every morning after breakfast. Mm. And the next 2 days, in the morning, have Ronjert, and in the evening, Luk-Thai-Bai. And again, both products are online. And the other thing is, I'm going to have this printed out, and I'll give it away at your event.
In New York, great.
Yes, great. Very important, because then we got to go through the light. There's a light therapy with a dark blue light over the area with cancer, and I'll talk about that in New York. And again, I'll have this written for anybody who wants it, and we'll hand this out. And then the last one is meditation. And as Lumpa says, meditation is real important because, of course, it increases white blood cell count, increases endorphins, reduces adrenaline. He goes on through a whole host of things that are so important. Meditation is really important in part of this whole package of healing.
Any particular type of meditation does he recommend?
Yeah, but to get into this, we wouldn't have time. But we can have a whole 1 hour show just on that.
Well, I'm really excited to meet Long Pa. I mean, he does sound like an amazing person just to be around and be in his presence and just tap into whatever he's tapped into. You know, Robert and his wife will be in New York with Long Pa on June 18th. At the Edgar Cayce Center, which is the Association for Research and Enlightenment, and that is 241 West 30th Street from 1 to 6. And at 6 o'clock, Long Pa will be giving a talk on what did you say, Robert?
Yeah, he'll give a talk on what he sees as a main reason why a lot of people get sick. And then he'll also address how people can get well. So he'll go through some of the biggest, you know, red flags that people need to watch out for.
Right. And also that day he'll be doing one-on-one sessions for free. And if people want to give a donation, they can. Do you want to give your number? I could just give my number.
Yeah, no,
you give your number.
Here, the information. If that's okay, I just wanted to put down that, going back to what we were talking about, acquiring this information and then putting it into a teaching format so that people can actually use this in their practices, in their healing practices with other people. So here it is. Thai Holistic Practitioner Alliance, or THPA, which is us, is an organization that teaches and certifies people in different facets of Thai traditional medicine, in brackets, to become a Thai Holistic Practitioner, including Thai Therapeutic Massage, Pun Kai, which is bad stress out, Thai Healing Yoga, which is really important for reducing stress, Pun Kai meditation, Qigong cardio, Nuad Baran, weight-bearing exercise, Thai weight loss system, Thai heat food healing protocols, and a lot of other stuff. So we were talking about how some people get certified in Thai yoga massage or Thai therapeutic massage because you're dealing with send lines and keeping energy flowing. That's real important. But we're saying, yeah, definitely that's valuable. But if you can take that to your clients and also introduce the food healing programs, the specific herbs that Lumpa recommends, And the other things that I'm talking about, it becomes much more of a full service. You can be more of a provider, a full provider of Thai holistic traditional medicine.
No, it's great. I mean, if you can, I think it's a great service you're providing, and what a gift to people that Longpot is coming to New York. And
let me give my phone number too. I'll give my phone number for information on Thai Holistic Practitioners Alliance retreats or to get certified in these modalities. Contact Robert at 905-915-3017. I'll say that again, 905-915-3017. Or email join thpa@gmail.com. I'll say it again, join thpa@gmail.com.
And this is also posted on my website, newrealities.com, so if people want to tell other people about Longpot, they can check out the homepage at newrealities.com. Thanks, Robert, for everything you're doing, and you've dedicated your life to this work, it seems like. And
well, it's important we see the great importance of, you know, as I say, bringing some balance back into it. You know, going back to that heart center. What am I here for?
Right.
And that's real important, because at the end of the day, if you get well, I always ask for what.
Right.
Why get well? For what? What? So
exactly. Thanks, Robert. I really appreciate that and everything you're doing. I look forward to seeing you and Longpa and Sirpan. And thanks for being a guest on New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And if you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening. Check the website, newrealities.com. And listen to me next week, same time, same station.